This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Chris Turpin and Stephanie Jean seemingly had it made in 2014. The English natives were half of the grunge blues band Kill It Kid that was signed to Sire Records and had just released its third album. But the married couple wasn't happy with either their record contract or the music they were making. They left and later formed the Delta Blues-inspired duo Ida May, which performs this weekend at the Peoria Blues and Heritage Festival. The couple now lives in Nashville. Turpin spoke with GLT's John Norton about living in the American South and the decision to leave Kill It Kid.
It was a really gutsy move.
It was.
Yeah, because also they were all our, you know, very close friends, and you know, our youngest experiences making music had been within that band, and we had been told by our management that you will never be picked up again. You know, you're signed to a major label and they've let you go. You know, you'll never succeed in this industry. And we also, you know, the contract we'd signed meant we couldn't even go out and speak to record companies or anyone, really, because we could have been tied in that deal for a long, long time. These major label deals are really nasty, and I'm not sure if a lot of people know what's in them. I mean, I'm not even allowed legally to talk negatively about any of the companies we were signed to, but these deals are seriously heavy-handed and they can have a long-term impact for years and years after the record has come out. So you know, we worked quite hard to end up shaking our way out of it, really, and it was a big gamble because we just did not know what would happen. But it's just simple, man. You feel like such a fraudster if you're up on stage and playing things that you don't believe in.
Chris, it was like around 50 years-ish ago that Clapton, other guys from Led Zeppelin, John Mayall, Long John Baldry maybe, those kind of people brought the blues back to life for Americans. It's like they resuscitated the American music for Americans. And now 50 years later, you know, you are sort of looking at American music in a different way and bringing it back to America again.
I hope so. I mean, it's funny, in the UK, people kind of turn our noses up at us. I have done in the past, Exciting Blues as a reference, because they're like, well, you guys aren't American, how can you be singing the blues? And I'm like, well, it was good enough for the Stones and the Beatles and John Mayall and, you know, Clapton and everyone else we've mentioned. So I find it makes no sense that us Brits become so immersed and in love with American music, especially suburban British kid like me from a small city becomes obsessed with, you know, 1920s country blues. It makes no sense. But for me, it was just more vital than anything else I'd heard. And it was more meaningful and more intense than anything else I'd ever heard before in my life. When we first moved to Nashville last year, I picked up a book of folk songs collected in Missouri. There's some of the first songs that were notated from that area. And man, it's just the ethno kind of musicology of it. It's just fascinating. And how, you know, there were songs in that book from where I grew up in Norfolk in England. There were songs where my dad lives in Yorkshire. There were songs from where Steph's family are from in Northern Ireland. And they were all being sung all over different parts of America. And it was all this huge, great melting pot. And I think it's one of the proudest things America has, is this incredible gelling together of cultures, from the Cajun singing in the South to the folk songs from the Irish and the Scottish and the Brits, combined with the sort of earthy, more African rhythms and the sort of natural raw beauty and poetry in the blues. I just think is one of the coolest things. And then how that spills into great American songwriters like Woody Guthrie and the Carter Family and Hank Williams, you know, it's just a... I feel that when we play here as well, it's kind of missed by a lot of people. I don't think it's treated as much reverence as it is perhaps even in the UK, which is a weird thing to say. I remember the first time we went to Clarksdale and we were going around the different museums and sites and things. And, you know, there's a place called the Riverside Inn where everyone from Martin Luther King to, it's where Bessie Smith died. It's where Ike Turner in theory stayed the night before he went and recorded Rocket 88 at Sound Records, and it's where Muddy Waters stayed and Howling Wolf stayed. Man, it's just still this little kind of rundown, beat up B&B, which is amazing. But, you know, in the UK, we would have probably slapped that in a museum and head things would be cordoned off, you know.
All our beautiful flawed designs, all the plans we made and wasted time, we left them in the dark to the bowlers and the sweethearts. Yeah, we drank out our peace of mind, we got drunk on Atlantic time, and I threw my heart into the traffic down on East Park.
It's the music of the British duo Ida May here on WGLT Sound Ideas. Chris Turpin is our guest. He and his wife Stephanie Jean are the duo Ida May. Chris, you now live in Nashville and you have toured the United States at least once or twice here now. But when you first got here a few years ago and you wanted to go on a pilgrimage of the South, you said you wanted to visit what you call holy sites. What was that trip like the first time?
Well, we've played now. We played the Duke Drum Festival in Mississippi in Clarksdale, and we've played down in Alabama and Louisiana and Mississippi a couple of times in Jacksonville and stuff. We've done a few little bits and pieces down there, but the first time we went, it was just purely a pilgrimage. I wanted to go back to all the kind of holy sites, as far as I were concerned, for some of these musicians. So when we first got here, bear in mind, we're kind of naive to a lot of this stuff in the UK, politics and race politics, and generally how we live in the UK is completely different to over here. We all live, you know, we were living in Holloway before we moved out to Nashville. So in Holloway, within an hour of where we lived in this little attic room before we moved to Nashville, there was 100 languages spoken. You know, there's every culture on top of one another, and we all lived side by side, and it's kind of, no one thinks anything of it. And the first time I went out to the deep Mississippi and did the blues trail along Highway 61, I thought this was going to be kind of a strange, you know, I'd have to try and kind of reconnect to what it must have felt like to live and breathe that air and be a part of those kind of communities. And in actual fact, it was so naive, but it really blew my mind just how little that landscape has changed. I really didn't have to do kind of much imagining of what it was like. You mean, there's markers put up, historic landmarks.
Right.
And man, they're in ghettos still, and, you know, real rundown areas. Like, some of these places are not open for business. So we found ourselves near some juke joints, half an hour off the beaten track, and, you know, with some places we shouldn't have been a few times. But, you know, that's part of it, man. You know, I feel very lucky to have seen what we've seen, especially in the way we've seen it.
Well, Chris, with your deep devotion, understanding, love of especially Delta blues, when you got to visit the South, got to visit Highway 61, Clarksdale, you know, those old dusty roads, when you saw the geography, did it help you understand at all where this music came from? Did it do anything for you that way?
It did. I think just even just breathing in the same air and the atmosphere and the space and the light and stuff like that, is it kind of contextualizes and frames a little bit of what I was listening to, because it's just very different to where I come from. So it did help, and it was very inspiring.
Standing in the rain as I'm diving in the sea, if you couldn't keep your promise, why'd you lie to me? Now I'm on the long road with a gun in my mouth, watching Go to Sports Live in a hungry house. Reach, 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 yes, I am. Reach, 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 out.
You know, we're completely colorblind in the UK, and experiencing and being around kind of more racist attitudes, I guess, for the first, kind of blunt racist attitudes for the first time, was pretty eye-opening and kind of overwhelming. I've never thought in those terms. You know, these guys were just my heroes, and they will be, you know, forever. So, you know, that was kind of quite a scary thing to, you can read about it and you can watch interviews and documentaries and things, but it's very different when you're in that area. But for me, I think that the big kind of aha moment and epiphany was when we realized that, you know, the books I'd read from, you know, Jack Kerouac and J.D. Salinger and the traveling I heard about Woody Guthrie doing, and then realizing that we'd kind of traveled a huge number of miles, and that, you know, standing at a merch stand at someone else, you know, at every show we play, you meet everyone from people at the bottom of the welfare line to millionaires at the merch stand. You never know who you're going to meet, and we'll end up meeting, you know, whether we're in Virginia or Mississippi or somewhere in New England, you'll meet maybe 100 people a night that you'll share stories with and conversations with, and we try as much as we can to do that. And that kind of realization that, you know, shit, these things I dreamt of doing, I'm now doing, you know, or I've done to some extent, and that was a really important moment, I think, for us.